Like, the best thing I can do for you as a friend is, you know what, Buff? I hope you get to a point where you can forgive your mother and be able to move on.
I like that.
Because I can tell you, you can move on. Now, the pressure's on me. Like, well, nigga, you need to move on. However you want to take it, you can get mad or not, but you need to move on. That's putting pressure on, putting it back on me. But like, you know what, Buff? I hope you can get to the point, brother, where someday you can move on and be find the peace that you need with this situation. That's just the hope. What up, what up, what up, what up? It's Three Brothers No Sense, your favorite barbershop style podcast. I'm Tavares Ferguson, a.k.a. Ferg, everybody's favorite bad guy. Join my co-host, Buff and Rozzy. Fellas, tell them what's on your mind.
It was a tough, tough day, our last 24 hours, for the anime fans out there. If you guys don't know, Akira Toriyama, who is the creator of Dragon Ball, passed away at the age of 68. So the anime, manga, nerddom is just in mourning right now. I mean, he did a lot. He got a lot of folks who had never seen anime before into anime. Because that for a lot of people, especially our age group, Dragon Ball was their first anime ever that they watched. So, just RIP to him, man. Heart goes out to all the anime nerds out there. The really, really hardcore ones are like taking it super hard, but it's been a rough one though for everybody.
In an effort not to take the moment lightly, because I'm not an anime fan. How are you doing, my brother? How's Ollie? Yeah. Y'all okay?
We okay. Ollie doesn't know yet. I haven't even broke it to him, but Ollie wasn't even like a super Dragon Ball fan, so he probably doesn't care. Now, if Oda dies, the creator of One Piece, we might go into mourning for a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Might try to make it to Japan for the funeral type thing. Like, One Piece is, that's chef's kiss. So, you know, it's like the creators of, what is it? That Avatar, The Last Airbender. Like, that's gonna be a sad day. You won't care? No, not really. Anyway, man, so
they're alive. I don't know their names. I mean, I like the show.
I don't know either. Is it? No, it's not DB Weiss. Isn't that I don't know. No, I don't know. So it might be them. But anyway, yeah. So that happened. We had Metagate. I don't know if you guys know about that, but Facebook and Instagram and everything went down for 3 whole hours and people lost their minds. Oh my God. What I will say though is that's a tough loss for Meta. That was $28 million, an estimated $28 million that they lost in ad revenue for those 3 hours. So it's a tough one for them. But for the people that are out there that couldn't last the three hours,
did they die?
They almost. I think some people like almost lost their mind. Like they were not happy because Facebook was down. Like they went to Twitter and X, and that's really what X is good for now, is laughing at Katy Perry.
Did they die though?
And, no. Did they? Who died?
If they didn't die, I'm good. I didn't even know it went down until I saw people complaining today. You knew it went down, Buff?
Yeah, we were at work. So I found mine never went down, so I don't know what. Unless it went down.
All of Facebook?
It was like it was all Facebook, and but maybe because I don't look at it enough, like it was just the part that had already loaded on my phone, and I didn't try to refresh it or something. I that's probably what happened. So I was watching stuff that was probably old on my phone, but I don't. Again, it was the middle of the day. I had no idea.
Hopefully it can go down for a week next time.
It'll be good for everybody, right? Ain't that what you said? So, yep. The last thing that I got, man, because I'm sure y'all going to talk about the State of the Union and the response to the State of the Union. But I wanted to kind of report Jeff Bezos is the richest man alive once again. So just to put it in perspective, folks, Jeff Bezos got a divorce, split his money in half with his wife.
Half.
In half. And still is the richest man in the world. That lets you know how much money that dude had.
And she was like the richest woman in the world. Apparently she's like giving it all away now. But at the time, she immediately became the richest woman in the world.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's wealth.
I don't even know. I can't even imagine what it's like to be that rich.
Like, what do you do?
What do you buy?
What do you, yeah, exactly.
You buy the Washington Post like he did.
or Twitter and rename it X. Rich. So, yeah.
Okay. I got a question now. Go.
Oh, all right.
Continue.
So, but that's all I got, man. That's it. Just wanted to kind of throw those out there.
Two of the topics Rozzy just mentioned transitions to what I want to talk about. First, Jeff Bezos, he did buy the Washington Post, a newspaper that I have become fond of reading every day at work. And I just want to say from reading it the last 3 weeks now, journalism is not dead. That's a popular thing that people say. Journalism isn't dead. We're just lazy. And we like things in quick clips.
Mm-hmm.
But journalism is still out there, and it takes money to have good journalism and investigate things like that. And a lot of people are not putting the energy into it to do it, but it's still out there, just not as plentiful as it used to be because people don't care. People rather read what's fake or what's seemingly entertaining and very, very quick. And they don't have time to sit and look at read an entire article. But if you get a chance, if you don't have access to a physical newspaper, I like the actual physical newspaper.
That's what I was going to ask. Do you actually read the paper?
Yeah, yes. Yep.
Of course he does. He sits there in his, I was going to say Armani or Mink house coat.
Isn't it Versace?
Smoker's jacket.
I'm at home. Yeah. I'm at work, though, when I read this. Before I get the shift started. Preferably with a cup of coffee.
Oh, so it's the Armani suit.
I don't have any Armani suits. So, but yeah, I just want to put that out there, man.
You simpletons.
I want to put that out there.
That's good, though. I haven't subscribed to it yet. I keep getting, there's a lot of stories that come up, and I'll try to read it, and it's like, oh, subscribe to Washington Post. I'm like,
yeah, that's the thing. You can subscribe to it, but, you know, people rather, you know, get their news for free on the internet, and you just got to hope that it's true what you're reading.
Does truth really matter these days?
It should.
You're wasting your time with the truth, Buff. Not entertaining. It gets the people going.
He also mentioned Facebook and Instagram going down, and I only learned that when people started complaining, like he said on, I still call it Twitter. I don't really like calling it X.
Mm.
But y'all know recently I've become an old grandpa, get off my lawn when it comes to social media. And I was kind of happy it went down. But the Senate, Congress in general, is beginning to focus on social media a lot, mainly TikTok.
Yep.
And TikTok did something that backfired on them. They encouraged their users to call members of Congress and say, hey, don't ban us and things like that. Callers got so aggressive and threatening that it wound up reaching a rare bipartisanship where it sailed through a House committee. You got 20 members in the Senate that have sponsored a bill. And basically, they're telling ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, to either sell the company, or they're going to ban it from the United States in 6 months. And President Biden has already said if that bill reaches his desk, he'll sign it. So Congress is really coming at the social media. And again, I don't know if you want to call this hypocritical or whatever. I use social media. I will flatly say that I use it. I have no problem with it going away.
Neither. It will be an adjustment, but I think I'll get over it quickly. You know, I probably, my life probably would improve. Probably more productive. Less not stressed, less irritated.
Yeah.
Because social media, you know, irritates me. You know, I'll see a post or something and I just, it's not even that I get irritated with the post. I get irritated with the state of the people. The people that are agreeing, the people that, you know, if there's a post that makes complete sense, and then just the propaganda, and there's just like the infighting. It's like, how do we get here? Like, this is just the statement. And so you had something else, Buff?
Well, Rosie mentioned State of the Union, but I just was going to ask you guys, what grade would you give the president and what grade would you give the response by the senator from Alabama? But that's all I got after that.
Is that your official question, or you want to wait for that? Oh, okay. No,
No. Just a quick grade.
Quick grade. I'll give Biden. I'll give him an A, actually. It was one of the better State of the Unions based on especially current history. It's low bar, right?
One of the most watched in a while, too.
Yeah, that was a really low bar coming off of Trump. But I think he did what he needed to do for two things. One is he did what he needed to do to energize his base, because his base was really worried about him. And I think after the State of the Union, a lot of the base said, okay, we got stuff to talk about. What we've been talking about here on the podcast for a couple a couple months now is he's doing a lot of good stuff. He just has a sucky PR team. They are not putting it out there, and they're not letting people know what they're actually doing. So I think he did that. I think he showed a lot of the Joe Biden that actually was very successful in Congress, right? Be able to joke back and forth, joke on the Republicans, but still not alienate them and be like, hey, well, give me a bill. Why don't y'all do it? Oh, that's not what you're going to do? That's good. Like, I think his rapport with the Republican side was good. It was a little political, a good bit political, actually. But I think that's just what we have to do. I think the State of the Union's where the president gets up there and the State of the Union is strong. And you know, this it's this healing thing. I think that's gone for a little while. Until the MAGA Republicans kind of get taken care of, I think that's gone. And that was way longer than just a grade. Now, the response, an F, a Z, whatever the worst grade you can give anybody, I give it that. That was Tubi level acting. It was horrible. It was, that is not what Leadership Alabama taught you, Katie Britt. I think that's her name, right? Yeah, Katie Britt. I went through Leadership Alabama, or Alabama Leadership Initiative at least, and that is not what they taught us when we were going through there. So I'm kind of mad that this is a product of the Alabama leadership growth thing.
Did she go through? Are you sure she went through that?
I'm pretty sure. Almost every last politician to come through Alabama has gone through that program. It's kind of a feeder to all the politics that you kind of see. So I'm pretty sure she's gone through it. I need to check, though. To confirm it. But either way, it was horrible.
Okay, so an A and an F. What you got for it?
I give it a B plus, just because I agree with everything Rizzi said, but they were just because the world is so nitpicky today. Like, if you watched when they recapped the State of the Union, they recapped things like how many times he coughed, how many times he stumbled through his words and stuff like that. And it just, unfortunately, it gives the weak-minded talking points. There's certain things that made him, and I say embrace your weaknesses. You know, like, I'm sorry, you know, I feel like America's been sick these last 2.5-3 months. And he could have like, I'm sorry, whatever you got, whatever's going around, I got it. Embrace it, lean into it. So I'm pretty sure all of us have been coughing, or you know somebody who's been coughing at work over the last 3 months. You know, it was just embracing and stuff like that. It's nitpicky, but it's just people were looking for chinks in his armor, and that's what it was. to the point where I think that he coughed 36 times. He stumbled through his words 16 times. Like, there was a count for these things. And I'm like, that's just so stupid. And so my thing is, I think you seize the moment. I'm all about leaning into your weakness and making it relatable. I think that's the only thing he could have did better. It was super political. And I'm going to give the senator from Alabama an I, incomplete, because I started listening to it and I just stopped. I couldn't. Just because, and I was telling Riza this other, I can't support bad behavior. Like, when it's something that's just like, I can't give this. I don't know what my view or views does for this person, but I don't want them to link. I don't want them to get any benefit of like, okay, 30 million Americans watched the interview. 29,999,999, because I won't be part of it. Because it was just disappointing. It's like, it's scary to think how we're here. And so a B plus, an I incomplete. I absolve myself from making a decision on it because I did not finish an interview. But I will say Biden did a great job, but the State of the Union was depressing for me.
Why?
If I was an alien, if I was somebody from another country watching this, it just shows you how split America is. You would have thought we were Korea, North Korea and South Korea, in the state of Korea, because the lines were so split down the middle. You know, I mean, and it was so, because Vice President Kamala, you know, she's standing, right, and applauding as much as possible. And then you look to your, our right, his left, and it's kind of just like, all you saw was just this disdain for everything he said. Unless it was something like, they have talking points. I feel like the GOP has standing points. Here are the five or six things, if they say, we got to stand and applaud for. Like, oh, they're talking about this. If we don't applaud this, we look bad.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, it's just like, man, this is sad.
But that's
we can't agree on.
That's been every State of the Union for at least the last 15, 20 years. Like, I haven't seen a bipartisan since what?
I agree.
I'd probably say, what's his name? Bush.
Reagan.
I'd give Bush on 9/11. Like, the State of Union after that probably was.
And what I mean is, I get it, but I feel like that was the politics. But I feel like the country feels like that now. Like, the GOP, like, the Democrat, you know, it's always been that way. But now it's like, if the politicians ever needed to look together, it's now. Because during 9/11, the right and the left, civilians, weren't that split.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wouldn't walk in a room in 2000, no, November 10th, 2001, and be able to tell who was a Dem and who was a Republican. Not as much as you do now. Like, it is split down the middle. And the fact that they're like, I feel like they're leaning into it more now than ever. Maybe I'm more aware, because now it's a really almost an us against them. And I think it's just getting worse and worse, where it's a us against them. So, yeah. My bad. Continue. Let's keep the party going.
One thing I will say,
it's still on you.
Yeah. One thing I will say about that, though, is I don't like how the MAGA right, this idea that you can interrupt and like just get loud and like, you know, just catcall the president during the State of the Union, like the decorum of the Senate and the or Congress in general is not there. That I will call out. That irks me. Buff, I don't know if you saw the chat, like the dude that like stood up and y'all had to kick out or whatever. I don't know if you saw the chat where we were like, beat him up. Like, bruh, we did like kick his ass. Like I need to see a couple punches going, like shut these dudes up and women. I ain't gonna say, you know, no names, MJG, but you know, or what is it? Marjorie Taylor Greene, MTJ. MTG. Dang, I can't say it.
MTG. Rapper. You said the rapper, MJ. Apologies to MJG of my the group A Ball at MJG.
They got some names up in there. God dang.
Yeah, that was just like, is she serious? But I think it's never been that split. It's kind of like, this is how we play the game. Like, we don't rock with them, they don't rock with us. It's you know, it's, to me, our political system is up there with right now with one of some of the greatest feuds ever in American history. It's up there with the Bloods and Crips, North and the South.
Hatfields McCoys. Like,
is that Hatfields McCoys? Is liberals and MAGA? Like, is if you look at the, if you did Mount Rushmore of freaking feuds, it would be up there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the majority of it. I talked for a while, so let's go ahead and jump into the questions.
I think I went first last
week. You went first. I went second. Byron didn't get a question. So,
Buff, it's on you.
Let me see. You know what? I don't want to rush through this. No joke for us today, Razzy?
No, I don't have one. I thought so. Okay. I didn't prep one.
You know, you don't got to tip me with a good time.
Oh, man.
No, right. It was just no. It was a yes or no.
So this wasn't an article. It was more like a, almost like an opinion piece. It's a section in the newspaper where people just kind of like write in what they're going through. And the journalist or whoever prints the article, they kind of like write a response and they show a couple other responses from other people. So I forgot the title of this one, but basically this is what the gist of it was. And I want to talk to you guys about forgiveness and being triggered. So this young lady that wrote in said that when she was 13 years old, her mom just up and left her, her younger sister, and her father. And she said her father was a workaholic, so that basically meant that she had to raise her younger sister, and she pretty much, her childhood was no longer existent. So 10 years later, mom is back in the picture, and she says, hey, I had, you know, a mental issue. I've been to therapy now. I'm past it. I'm better. But I had to get away. And she's writing in because she's upset at how her sister and her father are welcoming mom back with open arms. Now, she said to a degree, she kind of doesn't fault her sister too much because she was so young when it happened. But she's a little upset at her dad and the rest of the family just, you know, accepting her back. And she was asking, you know, she was basically asking, you know, what are ways to, should she forgive her mom? Should she, because the family is telling her, look, your mom went through this. You need to understand that and forgive her. And she just is, you know, taking offense to that. And is just asking, you know, what can she do? Should she forgive her mom right away? Things like that. And so I wanted to talk to you guys about, you can talk on that specifically or just in general about forgiveness and like the process of it and what advice would you give her. But also, what slightly triggered me, the author, because she responds to the story first. And the very first thing, her very first comment was, why are you letting your dad off the hook? He shouldn't have been working like he was and been there more for you and your sister. And I'm like, wait a minute. If this was the other way around and, you know, mom was a workaholic and dad left, we would be saying, hey, we get it. But, you know, mom had to do what she had to do to provide. And, you know, another case of dad leaving the kids. I just kind of got triggered. Like, once again, we find a way to blame men. And I did try to take a step back and I talked to Tab about it. And she kind of understood it more. She broke it down to me a little bit. I'll get into that if it requires it. But I just want your thoughts on those two things, forgiveness and just being, you know, triggered by certain things. And are you able to listen to reason once you triggered or not?
I'll go first. I'll answer your question in reverse. I'm triggered too, Buff. Because I just think it goes back to that accountability piece, right? You know, all of us, somehow we find a way to blame the other party. And a lot of times it's men, you know, in my opinion. And what I look at is we're all human. And so if this dad, this present dad, let's call it what it is, the father, the dad that stayed, right? I never planned for this and never conditioned for this. There's things that we're taught and we're conditioned to do as men, right? And provide and protect is one of those things, right? And so my whole life, I've been conditioned to provide and protect. Even in the absence of this mother, I'm doing what I'm taught to do, provide and protect. And sometimes, and I used to say it all the time, I'm trying not to say it as much now, is the me I want to be and the me I am are two different people, right? It is the me that I am is a bad person. Like, I would love to be more open and like loving and just, you know, like, that's just not who I am. But I will do whatever it takes to make sure my family's okay and that my family's thriving and winning to the best of my ability. And sometimes we're just not equipped to do things other ways. And yes, you know, like, well, he's a parent, he has to grow, and he has, and all of a sudden I think people have this superhero mentality. They're read comic, but it's like being a parent just makes you a better person. All of a sudden you get this book on how to be a better person, how to overcome certain things. You're still a person. We've all been parents for years and we're still learning. You learn something every day as a parent. Like, nope, that was a mistake. Mm-hmm. If you'd asked me this 2 months ago, a year ago, I would have said this is the way to do it, but it doesn't work that way. You know, my daughter asked me the other day, because, you know, it's almost been a year since I really had, was going, started my deep depression with my job. My daughter just was telling me that it seems that I'm happy. And she's like, I never wanted my kids to see my stress levels and to see adult problems. And so I want to protect them from that, but I haven't been able to do that. So I say all that to say, sometimes you got to give the other person grace just for being human, right? Nobody's perfect, but you're supposed to be perfect in this situation. Now for the daughter, as far as forgiving the mother, I'm not upset with anybody except for potentially the outside family or whoever's telling her she needs to get over it. Because I think we come from that generation where, well, that's your mama. You're supposed to love and, you know, honor, and you got to honor that mother and that father. Anyways, like, she f***ed up. So, and it's, I'm not saying she's a bad person or she's responsible. She could have been going through some serious health issues. People snap. People go through. People break. Like, sometimes you just break. You can't. You want to be a better. I can't do anything. And I get it. I was on the verge of breaking. I get it. And so to blame the mother, I'm not going there. I'm just saying for everybody else to tell her how she's supposed to react to her trauma. I hate when people tell you, well, get over it. You know, well, that's your mama. You know, well, she was going through something. I get it. But I went through something. And I don't. For whatever reason, I'm pretty sure she wishes that she could get over it like the mother, I mean, the father and the other sister, even though she might not admit it. But trauma and heartbreak does that to you. Nobody wants to sit there and be miserable. if she could turn around and welcome on with open arms, she would. But her trauma, her heartbreak has led her down this path. Baby, don't worry about forgiveness. Worry about healing. Forgiveness is step 2, 3, 4, 5. Go to therapy. Get with somebody that can help you heal from whatever heartbreak and trauma that you went through, that you can be in the mindset to potentially forgive. That's not your burden to bear. It might take you 5 years. It might take you 10 years. But also, heal enough that you don't ostracize or hurt the relationship you have with the people who were there. The father and the sister, because she's mad at them. Don't let a rift come between you guys because of the mother, for whatever her rationale. I don't even want to talk about the mom. Like, she's irrelevant in this situation. For the people that forgive her, great. For whatever she went through and she's a better person, great. But that's not the question, right? It's how do you move forward? And you got to heal. Don't worry about that. You probably got some anger, some hurt built up, and we're taught, you know, you're trying to rationalize and please leave the nigga alive at the door, you know, because, well, all she had to do was this and this, and my sister's friend did this and this, and her mama never left. Like, that's not your situation. Look at your situation, go get the help you need, heal, and maybe one day you'll get to the point where you can forgive enough that you're okay. It's not about the mom. She's irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I'm done.
I think one of the best responses to that was, like you said, heal. And then you may find yourself in a position where you can forgive her. But take care of yourself first. Go ahead, Ryza.
Ultimately, I hate when we kind of give people a bad rap for saying you got to get over it. You got to get over it, because it's the truth, right? And I think folks saying it they make it sound simple, right? I don't think folks are saying you got to get over it and get over it tomorrow. Don't forget about it. You'll be okay. Don't worry about it. I think it's people are trying to encourage her. A lot of times, you know, when folks say stuff like that, I really feel like they're just doing it to try to encourage you. Hey, you got to get over this. You got to get over this. It doesn't come off like they want it to, right? I talked about when Jen died and folks would be like, you know, it's God's plan or whatever. And you'd be like, fuck you, right? And like that's your response to them. Like, because, you know, you can't hear that right then, right? And I think that's that same thing when people are saying you got to get over it. It's they're telling you the right thing. You do got to get over it, because I think on this show we've said it. Forgiveness is for you. It's not for the other person, right? Like, forgiving that person takes that weight off of you, and you carrying that weight just weighs you down, and it stresses you out, and it gives you that depression and all of that. Like, finding a way, we could say you got to heal so that you can forgive the person, or forgiving the person can be part of your healing journey. Either way, the thing is that, like, you gotta get that weight off of you. So I do think she needs to forgive her at some point in her healing journey. She has to heal from that. As far as welcoming her back, it's one of those things that, like you said, for people break. People can't deal with it. And she probably felt like it was better for her to leave than to stay there with her and let her daughter see that or go through that. You know, if she, I don't know why she left, right? I mean, she might have been cracked out or whatever. Like, do I stay here and let my daughter see me struggle through this and see the crack pipes on the street, you know, in the living room or whatever? Or I'm going through a mental breakdown, it's depression, and she's seeing me crying every day and balled up in a corner and all that. Like, do I stay and do that, or do I leave and try to get myself together so then I can come back? Because I know that I got a strong man that's going to take care of her, and she's going to be all right and all of that. Like, what is the best situation? So her mom made the decision that, you know, she thought was best. Was it best or not? I don't know. But she needs to be able to say, welcome back. If you want to be in your younger daughter's life, cool. I'm grown. I don't need you, or whatever it is. Cool. You ain't got to be here for me. I'll speak to you when I see you at the family events or whatever, dad still loves you. He's happy you're back, so he has somebody to lay next to, this, that, and the other. Like, the thing is, the other people in that life are finding happiness with her coming back. If you can't find happiness with her coming back, and you're grown, cool, you stay away, right? And then but you got to find that way to forgive her, because if not, then you're just going to be carrying that weight, and that it really feels like a weight on your shoulders.
And to the point where it doesn't weigh you down. I agree with you on that. I don't agree with you like we just got to forgive in the mindset where we do ceremonial, and to go back to that word ceremonial, like mindsets. Because I hear people, and I have a huge family, where we use cliche sayings. Like you said, after Jen passed, people are like, well, God don't make no mistakes, and you know, it was her time. Like, it's kind of like, nigga, I'm not trying to hear all that. Like, right. You're just saying because you were taught to say this. And one of the things I hate, you know, in our Black community is we excuse bad behaviors. You know, well, that's your mama. You still got to respect her. No, my mom's a crackhead. She did this. She sold me. Like, she made her choices. I don't owe her shit.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And there.
Sometimes
that's why I say,
you know, sometimes you gotta recognize. To. Sometimes you gotta recognize that, like, no, you made a decision to do whatever you did. Maybe you were on drugs. Maybe it was a mental breakdown. Then you made another decision to leave and stay away for 10 years. Maybe it was and so that was your decision to make. And so now my decision is to stay away from you. Like, you got to make your decision, and now nobody's telling you. That you should, the same people that are telling me to forgive should have been the same people to tell you to bring your ass back, right? And so, like, I know family members where the older generation is like, well, that's your mama, that's your daddy, don't talk to your daddy. Like my dad was on drugs, he got locked, like, he abandoned it. Like, it's, you can't, not mine by any means, am I saying that? I'm just saying, when people have those situations and you have people who want to forgive people, for one, because they have a similar background and they're like, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. You know, you abandon your kids, or your brother abandoned your parents, or you, like, it's a almost like, I hate to use the word family curse, but this isn't the first time we've seen it. We've normalized these behaviors. And so now it's upon the victim to get over it.
I
haven't heard anything. Maybe I
think that there's
Byron, did they say anything to the mother what she needs to do to make amends?
No. I think so. I look at it very separately. I don't think you need to forgive that person to them to make them feel better. And that when I say you need to forgive them, I think internally yourself, you gotta let that to the side. Like, that happened to you in your life.
Look at that.
You gotta
don't let it weigh you down.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Like, forgiving them of having that conversation. Like, it's okay, mom, that you left me for 10 years. No, I'm not on that at all. Like, I'm not saying you gotta forgive. Or what we say is you forgive but never forget type thing. It's like you're back, cool, right? That 10 years happened. I'm not gonna forget that. So, like you say, if you don't want to be associated with them, if you, like, I can't be in the room with you right now, because you've been gone for 10 years and I'm holding a lot of that animosity. What'll end up happening, though, if you start forgiving them in your heart, like, you'll be able to move in those spaces with that person and feel that weight.
And maybe the word forgive is what's throwing me. Like, if you've made amends, like, if you've been gone for 10 years, I've learned to live my life without you. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you're not maybe that's a part make of peace. My life.
That's it. Like, if you can make,
you know what
peace
I'm saying? Like,
with
make
all
peace.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm cool where we're at now, and all of a sudden you come and disrupt this, and now I'm supposed to be this loving daughter. You want to spend Christmas together. You want to bring the grandkids to you and dad's house. Like, no. My kids don't think they have a grandmother. I've been telling them that for 5 years. And now all of a sudden they have a grandma. Like, I got to change my life because you're better. I'm not cool with that. You know, like, and I'm saying, like, and she's okay with that. Like, if she's made peace with her situation, I talk about my biological father. I love him, you know, but I made amends and I made peace on the part he played in my life, where he's in my life now. And I'm cool with that. But if you want me to be like, oh, this super respectful and grateful son, and that's your daddy, and you need to do, you know, he needs you to give him a half your liver. That's, I can't do that.
Right.
But that's your daddy. I can't do that. He hasn't done the things in my life that make me say, hey, I'm going to go out of my way to do these things for him. And I love him.
Yeah.
Right. I love him. I don't have a problem with that at all. I called him yesterday or today, you know, like, hey, that's not a problem. But at the same time, it's not the same love I have for my mother. It's not the same love I have for my dad, you know, Kenneth Carter. It's different. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I got peace, but it's not the same. And so you got to give that. And when people are like, well, that's what I say. I think maybe because it's hit home where I've heard people say that. Well, that's your mama. That's your daddy. You got to forgive them. Da-da-da. It's like, why am I responsible? Why am I the responsible person now?
Yeah. Yeah, the victim shouldn't, you know, be the person that has thing. To step up.
Yeah, I get that. And when you said it, that's what I'm thinking is that, well, you know, that's your mama. You need to forgive her. Why? You know, like, did anybody ask her, what is she going to do to make amends for me?
Yeah. So, and I definitely agree there. And like I said, I'm all about the person, the affected party, right? And them feeling better and getting over it and being able to live their life and make peace with it. So maybe that's what, yeah, I'm more leaning towards. But to your second part of that.
Back to Brozier. Yeah, your peace bubble.
Peace bubble. Protect that peace bubble. But back to the second part of the question where you were like triggered on that. I mean, coming from the single dad, right? It's like, I feel do 100%. And I agree with you. I think it's, they're coming for him like he was not there, or the daughter even coming for there. Oh, you couldn't be there for me. It was like you said, I had to, before mom left, I was working like this and it was not a problem. And that's how we were able to pay the bills and support and do all this stuff. So now that mom's gone, I got to work doubly hard because guess what? Now I got to pay for after school care that I wasn't paying for when you were, you know, when mom was here. I got to be able to do these things. I got to be able to get off work and get you to all these different things. And I got to try to keep the house and the yard and all that stuff. So like, you got to work way harder. Like, you're not going to be able to do and be Superman and beat up for all the stuff that even the stuff that you might've been able to beat up before when you were in that two parent household, you can't do it now that you're that single parent. So I 100% agree that, or I got triggered by that one. So,
and I'm let you go after this, Buff. And Rizzy, I can't commend you enough and tell you how much I admire and respect what you do as a father, because when I heard him say this, it made me think about you and how many people were concerned that you can do what you needed to do, right? Mm-hmm. And you've gone above and beyond their expectations, right? But it's not a lot of people that can do that. And even if you couldn't have done what you're doing, it wouldn't have made you a bad father. Like, it's still, you're conditioned to do certain things. We're taught to do certain things. And now I got to pivot because all of a sudden my wife leaves us. I don't know how to manage it. All I can do is do what I can do and to the best of my ability, and just because you're only human. There's no like, okay, I see what happened. Let me give you the new playbook. There's no new playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I commend you. It may, like, as he was reading that question, it made me think about you. So I don't know if we say it enough or recognize it enough. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. Proud of you. And once again, if you ever need us, we're there. Buff, it's on you. My bad.
Peace bubble, make peace. I think overall, we just need to realize that forgiveness doesn't always look the same. It can vary. It can be, like Rizzy mentioned, just forgiving that person enough to where you're not carrying around hate and anger all the time. Forgiveness doesn't always mean, you know what? Come on over for Thanksgiving. We all gonna like you said, Ferg, I'm good. I learned to live without you. I'm good. I don't hate you. Whatever the case, I'm glad you're better, whatever. For the people that are telling her, look, you need to get past it, rather, you're right. They are right in telling her that, but they also need, if you're going to tell somebody that, you need to also add in that it happens in different time frames for different people. It's not going to happen overnight. It may not happen next month. It may not even happen next year. But just say it, hey, at some point, you know, just for yourself, you're going to want to forgive them. Which part I want to start with first? I'll start with the triggering part.
Buff, real quick, you said something right there that made me think. It's not even you need to get off something. Like, my thing is, like, it should almost be a hope. Like, the best thing I can do for you as a friend is, you know what, Buff? I hope you get to a point where you can forgive your mother and be able to move on.
I like that.
Because I can tell you, you can move on. Now, the pressure's on me. Like, well, nigga, you need to move on. However you want to take it, you can get mad or not, but you need to move on. That's putting pressure on, putting it back on me. But like, you know what, bruv? I hope you can get to the point, brother, where someday you can move on and be find the peace that you need with this situation. That's just the hope. Mm-hmm. And you understand where I'm coming from that, because it's not, the pressure's not on you again. It's, I hope you can find that. So my bad.
Yeah. I guess I'm triggered because she starts off like this woman, this young woman, writes in and tells her how she's feeling and what's the best way to go about handling this situation with her mom. And her first response is, why are you letting your dad off the hook? What do you mean, why is she letting her dad off the hook? She lived this. This is how she feels. And you already whataboutism in her and saying, well, what about your dad? She ain't write you about her dad. She wrote you about her mom. Deal with that. Okay, I'm not saying the dad should be let off the hook 100%, because she does say my dad always was a workaholic and still is a workaholic. So apparently that's not something he did to cope with the mom losing. That's something he's always done. And so he didn't know any other way to go about it and just leaned on her to take care of the younger daughter. But I got triggered by that, I'm not saying the dad doesn't have any fault, because I think at best he could have at least communicated to his daughter, hey, this is what I'm going to need from, and maybe he did and she just didn't mention it, but if he didn't, this is what I'm going to need from you. You know, I need to work like this so we can take care of this. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to sacrifice some of the kid things you like to do and look after your sister when I'm not here. Things like that. But something that Tabitha brought to my attention was, in all likelihood, this mom didn't just get up and leave and nobody in the family didn't know anything about it. A lot of times what happens in families is the adults don't communicate anything with the kids.
Yep.
And so if they had a told her, hey, let me sit you down. Your mom is going through X, Y, and Z. She needs the type of help that's going to require her to be away from us for some time. We don't know how long, but it may take a long time. Talk to her. Don't just have her saying, my mom left and everything's on me, and she doesn't know anything about it until 10 years later. Oh, she had a mental health breakdown or whatever. Communicate with young people, believe it or not, can take on a lot of what we consider grown-up information. I can't tell you how many family secrets I learned once I became an adult. And the adults looking at me like, you didn't know that? What you mean I didn't know that? How the hell was I going to know that? Nobody said anything.
Y'all see me out of the room when you start talking about it. Like,
yeah. So you know, you guys definitely covered a lot, and I feel like my beginning question and this question took up a lot of time, but I'll just say you guys covered everything on the forgiveness end, and the whole triggering part was, to me, she was pretty much telling her, hey, forget about everything you said about your mom. You need to blame your dad. Like, I just hated that was her first response, because we would not do it. And y'all know I hate gender wars, but I truly feel we would not have done that. No one would dare to have done that if the situation was the other way around.
Oh, bro, you know, not only would they have not done
it. Never would
have
came up.
No, yes, it would have. They would have gave, first of all, hats off to your strong-ass black mama for being a mother and a father to you. We need more than that. That's how it would have started, right? Like, we can agree.
And he got the nerve to come back talking about he healed. Now, well, take your healed ass where else?
Sassy. You know, like, that's my thing. It's y'all said it. This is a great, and I think I was kind of sure, because I have a huge family. I've seen so many, you know, parents, you know, kids raised by grandparents and different, like, so many situations. But the it seems like a lot of times a common denominator is it's put on the kids to be the adults. The kids have to be adults raising themselves. And then when the parent is right, the kids have to be the adult in the situation again to forgive. This shit, she had to be adult early. Let her be a kid. Let her be selfish. Let her go through this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's we still haven't said the mother's responsibility. We haven't had a conversation on, you know, usually this is the same. This is, you know, the same. Ain't none gonna keep a mom away from her kids.
Yeah.
You know, you know, if a dad and a mom break up and the mom won't let the husband see the kids or the dad see the kids and stuff like that, and he's got stopped going through it and he's stressed out. That's just weak. No, a real man gonna see his kids no matter what. No matter what. And I'm not saying that's true, but we got to keep that same energy. And when that kid is going through it, because even if she's an adult, there's an inner child that's hurt. And you're telling this inner child to still be an adult in a situation that she's had to be an adult in for the last 10 years. I still have to be the adult in the situation.
Man, do you know how many whatever emojis we would have got to this story? It took him 10 years, and we would got all these examples on how he could have got help and still stay with the family. I'm not going to even say all that. If this mom,
we got websites, everything.
If this mom felt like her mental health was so bad that she needed to leave the house, I'm glad she left. If it was that bad,
mm-hmm.
I'm glad she left. Like, that obviously was the best thing for her to do.
Well, what I'm more happy about is it seems like even though the dad worked a lot, there seems to be, based off the information, limited information we have, still a stable household. Because sometimes you're glad they left, but the kids end up in a worse situation. Mm-hmm. They end up in a foster home. They end up in this. Because what happens if the dad would have had a breakdown?
Right.
And now they're in a foster home and stuff like that. You know, who are we blaming in this situation?
And I think what I said by them knowing what was going on and just not telling her, that's probably why it was easy for him to welcome her back, because he knew exactly what she was going through or whatever. The daughter didn't. That's why I believe they didn't communicate that to her at all.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. And we got to do better communicating and stuff like that. A lot of the old mentality, it's that the kids need to stay in, you know, be out of grown folks' business, you know, forgive, honor thy mother and thy father, all these things. We got to be realistic. We got to start looking at things and realize that some of these things that we've been taught don't have the outcomes that we really want.
Yeah, that's the same argument I was going to say, that's the same argument that MAGA folks use, right? And all these folks is trying to ban books and all that. Oh, they're not old enough. They can't look at this right now. All that. It's like, these kids can absorb and understand way more than you think. And you just gotta let them experience life. I mean, that 13 was a grown person up until, what, 1800s, right? You were grown. Until then, I mean, so you knew everything. So, but now we want to coddle these kids to the 18, 21 years old and still talking about, oh, they just a kid and they don't know how to do stuff. I mean, we have caused that. I don't want to say Gen X, but y'all know how I feel about Gen X. But they started this. But yeah, we got to stop coddling the kids, man, and start getting them exposed earlier with the mentality, expose them with the explanation at the same time, instead of one problem is we're exposing them early because of TikTok and social media and everything else and the internet, and then we don't talk about it.
Let's find a way to turn this into a question. Let's spin off on this. Because I had a question, but I like where this is going anyway, because I think that's something. There's a lot of, you know, I think there's a fine line. You know, you gotta let, because I think there's some kid, there's a dangerous slope where we try to force kids to grow up too fast. You know, parents that try to make their kids their best friend, and tell, you know, there was a recent article and that I was reading that Kim Kardashian kind of went off on Northwest for, I guess, almost snitching on her because she didn't like Kylie or Kate, one of the sisters' outfits on the red carpet at the one of the award shows or something like that. And she's like, well, I told you that in secret. You shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't tell, you know, you should be loyal to mommy. It's like you're having, you're gossiping with a 10-year-old. And now when the 10-year-old tells the aunt and stuff like that, and now you're telling her about loyalty and how she's supposed to, you know, mommy told you that in secret and all this stuff, like, then why are you gossiping with a 10-year-old? You know, and then you have people that are telling the kids that the dad ain't no good and all the, like, it's, you're putting kids in grown-up situations. He's 8. He doesn't need to know how you and the father get along, or that, you know, he ain't no good and he got a new girlfriend. He ain't gonna love you, like, or she's not gonna, you know, your mama do this and that. Like, that's not a kid's business. So where do you draw the line on how you bring the kids into grown, I don't know, is it grown-up situations? Grown, I don't know.
Business.
It's like,
when do you let kids be in grown folks' business? Because gossiping isn't grown folks' business. Gossiping is just gossip, right? And I think it's when the kid is mature, when you see the child is mature enough to handle the conversation or what's going on, you should be having that. Or you should be breaking down the situation into chunks that they can understand, right? Like, at 5-6 years old, we were talking about Obama and Trump, right? And like, I had to explain to my kids at 6 years old that the president was racist, right? Like, I had to flat out tell them that. And like, those types of conversations we had to have. And because they're in a predominantly white school and they aren't teaching that, they're going to be walking up to those, some of the kids that their parents are talking to them about MAGA type of stuff and everything. So we had to have those types of conversations. So I really feel like it's just being able to, the situations that the kids are going to experience, you got to be able to explain it to them and break it down to them where they can understand it. So you might not get super in depth with it, but you got to open up some type of conversation with them. I think too often we just flat out don't ignore it and don't say anything about it.
And so the thing about it, you said you got to, do you? That's your choice, right? So if your kid, if you're exposing your kid to an adult conversation, that I'm like, you know what? I want my, almost, and it makes me think about the Santa Claus conversation, mm-hmm. right? That we had at the end of the year.
Still in their innocence.
Where we're like, you know, at what point do you talk to your kids about racism? You know, is it 5, 6? You know, is it 8, 9, 10? Do you let them, you know, just in case it happens, I want them to be ready. And so now they're, you know, they're on edge, you know.
Yeah.
Was that racist? Was that a microaggression? You know, or do you kind of like, you know, because your child, to me, your childhood is a very small window. And then your childhood innocence is even a smaller window, you know. And so do you take that away? And I don't know how old this girl was when her mother left and stuff like that, back to the original question, but it's like,
13.
What all do you talk, 13, do you, how do you tell a 13-year-old that your mother is about to leave you, and your mother, like, it's, and then, it's, especially
I'll tell 10, you,
15 at, years ago.
At 13, I don't think there was a conversation that my parents had in the household that I didn't know about. So, you know, like,
did it make you a better person, or?
I think so. It prepared me a little bit more. It let me understand what was going. But at the same time, I was 10 years old writing out the bills because my dad was in Kuwait, you know, in Iraq. So it was like my parents they could not talk to me about finances in the house. I knew how much everything was. I knew how much was in the bank because I had access to the checkbook and all that. So,
but did they do that for the other four?
I think so. But, and I think it was because I was the oldest and I kind of set that precedent. You know, like you say, parents are just learning, right? And so since they did it with me, it was like that was the natural progression of it. And so with the girls behind me, so they still had Tootie those was conversations.
Writing checks at 10?
She wasn't writing checks, but she knew how to. She would sit there with my dad and pay, help pay the bills or talk okay. about it and talk about the finances okay. and stuff. And so, like, my family was really financially savvy like that. My mom really went, like I said about gossip, I wasn't on the gossip, but my mom was never on really on the gossip either. But, like, social issues and stuff, I mean, we were a mixed family. Right. So we had to have that conversation very, very early because we experienced racism very, very early. Right. I talk about those times where we walk in and people give us the ugly eyes and stuff like that. So we really had to have those conversations really, really early in my household. And so I guess it is just me taking my life experiences and I just kind of give it to my kids. And so we had those conversations really early. I had to have those conversations with them. Right. Like, walking in with my dad and like my dad walking with my kids and that type of stuff. So we would have those conversations because we kind of had to. We had to have those conversations of you're going to experience these things. Like they may, some people might treat them a little differently. And I just would flat out tell them that person probably treated you differently because of this. Right. And that's the conversation. That's how it opens up. And so I never wanted to have that conversation where, like you say, I got them on edge. Like I'm not trying to train them to be on looking out for it or whatever. But when they experience something, I don't sugarcoat it. I'm like, here's what it is. Here's probably what happened. Oh, why is it that, you know, I'm watching the news, CNN or something, and somebody's some pundits on there and they're like, Trump's racist. And then the kids are like, why did they say Trump's racist? And I just go down the list. He did this. He did this. He did this. He did this. Here's the issue with that. So, you know, the kids are walking by watching the news. My kids just really, they ask and I answer. That's really what ultimately what happens.
And I think my thing is because I can relate to you. We have similar backgrounds. We have similar beliefs. But a lot of people believe racism is taught. And it's taught at an early age. And parents, the same way you're teaching kids, your kids about racism and Trump, you know, there's parents teaching their kids that Trump stole, I mean, that the Democrats stole the election and mm-hmm. that the black people are trying to take over their country and the immigrants are bad. Like it's you're coming from a place of love and, you know, and protection of your kids, but you have just as many people who are doing the same thing and they're raising little racists.
Yeah. But that thing about it is, you know, most racists are talking to their kids early for some reason. They're raising those little racists when the other folks on the other side usually aren't raising the non-racists, right? Yeah, they're trying to keep them right. kids and everything.
The
like
racists
that.
Get the racists get a head start.
Right.
The important thing about parenting, you ask when, the important thing is the fact that you usually don't get to choose when you talk to your kids about certain things.
Yeah.
That's the part of parenting that makes you have to be a parent. You usually have to talk to them when they discover something, see something, or hear about it. So that's 80% of the time is when you're going to tell them. The other 10 to 20% is going to be when you feel it's important enough for them to know. And then also, you know, you guys may be together and see something or experience it together. And I think, I forgot what it was, but I think, Ferg, you said you had a situation like that a long time ago with Sky.
Skylar, we were out and she saw a trans woman.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah. We had that conversation, mm-hmm. you know. And I think, and you're right. And the thing about it, you got to think, I have the youngest kids. You know, my oldest is younger than Rizzi's youngest. Yeah, right. Riza has the oldest. You got, you know, Jasmine's a teenager. It's like I have a 8, almost 9 year old and a 4 year old, almost 5. So I'm still new to this. And so that's really a good way to look at it, Byron. The 80-20. It's always the 80-20 rule, right? It's always 80-20. You're safe when you say 80-20, right? But I like the way you phrase that. And you do when they ask, you know, even Sky about Santa, you know. She's outside, so got to Santa. We ain't had to talk about Santa mm-hmm. yet. But it's you bring it up when they're ready, and hopefully that their exposure is not they're not overwhelmed with the situation, right? Their, you know, their first bout or conversation or, you know, sense of racism isn't where somebody's burning a freaking cross outside their school or something. Like, it's not like, and call them nigga. Like, that's not the first time you want to hear racism. You know, hopefully you're able to kind of gradually progress and do and introduce them to that. But, you know, Rizzy, you made a good point that, you know, the racists are teaching their kids early. So are we supposed to teach our kids to be woke? You know, I don't know. I don't know.
I think you do have to prep them. Once they start moving, when they start moving by themselves is when you have to prep them to be on the lookout for it, right? Like, I think that's really what it is. When you're always there with them, I don't think you have to prep them for it as much, because you're going to see it, or you're going to be able to avoid it or watch out for it. When they start going to school, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, where they're going to maybe potentially run into those racists, you got to have them ready to be like, hey, this might happen, right? I think it's no different than talking about bullying or whatever. So you may not even have to phrase it in a whole racist thing. Like, it's kind of like bullying. And if they bully you about your, you know, gender, or they bully you about your race or whatever, here's what you do. So I think you just have to, again, like I say, make it age appropriate. You got to break it down for them like that. But you got to have those conversations. As like Buff said, when you think it's kind of time that they may start experiencing it.
On another episode, I want to discuss how I think racism is mostly learned versus taught.
Okay, we can do that. Sounds like Trump is a candidate, so there's no time like the present or the next episode to talk about it.
Rizzy, do you think he's racist now? Because I know you used to say, you don't know if he's racist, but racists think he's racist.
I don't think he... It's hard. It's hard because he does racist things, right? No, he's racist. He's racist. He thinks there's some good ones. But I do think he buys into those racist tropes, and then he is actually encouraging the power structure to hurt African Americans, minorities, I mean, different religions, I mean, whatever you want to call it, xenophobic and racist. I mean, it's all of that. But, you know, it's kind of par for the course for his age group, too.
I don't know if he's, now that you think about it, I don't know if racist describes him. I think he's an elitist.
I can see that. And
him being an elitist, being anybody who the vast majority sees as inferior. Like, I think he's too arrogant to care about blacks and racism, or the Mexicans and racism. I think it's more so he's just kind of like, if you're not this, you all suck. And so, like, today you want to talk about this? I can talk about if poor white trash was going to get, talk about poor white trash was going to get him votes, he would talk about poor white trash. He doesn't like them either. You know what I'm saying? It's just, they just happen to be the people listening to him. So, like, you know, I don't think he thinks they're better than us. I don't, if you ask Trump, does he think that a poor white trash is better than a black white trash? I don't think he thinks that they're any different. They're just white, but the white trash is my voters, so I'm just talking about the black people.
I don't know. If he would not have gone after five white kids like he went after those five black kids. So, I mean, when you talk about that, the exonerated, what is it, exonerated six, is what they try to call them now. That's the new phrase for him. So, he would not have gone after those five white people like that. Like, that's the thing I say, why I say, yes, he's racist. Because it's he believes those things about black people. He has the power to do it, to go against them and put the
force. He's part of systematic racism. Yeah.
So that's why, I mean, he encourages that system and he has the power to move that system. So he's one of the worst types of racists because he's not just a racist like that's sitting there like calling you nigger. He is the one that he can make a phone call and put the system against you. He can put a front page ad on a newspaper and have everybody, you know, saying that you're rapist. Like that. Yes.
I think just saying he's racist downplays his isms.
Oh, he has a lot of them.
He's classist. He's sexist. He's racist. I think he's just if you're not this, then you're beneath me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he just doesn't call out the people that help him.
But I think there's levels, and I think white males is probably, or white males, then you throw in the elitist, right? So yes, he's going to respect the classes there. So even if a black person raises to that class, then he'll probably respect that person, right? The good ones. But I think his classism probably is more stronger than his racism, but that doesn't make him less racist. He's still racist when it comes down to it.
That's why I said I think he's elitist. He puts all those in the same, you know, they're not equal, but it's just like, yeah, all you mother beneath me suck. And this is the thing that seems to catch, because we're already in a racist country, believe it or not. I know there's people that don't believe it, that, and he's like, I'm just walk with this. And it sticks, because he's sexist, and whatever he says sexist, the women don't care. So, you know, yeah, but I definitely want to hit on that next week. But let's go ahead and close it on out, fellas. I think it was a good show.
Oh yeah, man, this was fun.
But no, real quick, Buffy, one of the last things you said, and we're talking about preparing the kids and all that stuff, and maybe you, Rizzy, like making sure when you're not there that they're ready. It always makes me think, and I said this after my dad passed away, it makes me think of the Black Panther spirit world scene. A man who has not prepared his children for his own death has failed as a father. So no matter what age those kids are, you have to prepare them as much as you can for that stage in life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If something happened to me today, have I prepared my kids as much as possible for, you know, have I instilled the things in my son who's 4, almost 5, that he should be? You know, have I put those certain qualities in him? You know, same thing with my daughter. You know, have I put those things in? And when they're 10 and 15 and 20 and 30, am I not checking the box, but am I doing my deal? And just back to what you were saying, Byron, as a parent, you know, that's part of parenting. You know, it's like, hey, these are the conversations we need to have. These are the things I need to prepare you for at 10 that I didn't prepare you for at 5, because you weren't ready for it at 5. But you're 10. We got to have this conversation. We got to talk about boys. We got, because maybe you're not with boys, talking about boys yet, but I don't want to wait till you're 15. Like, oh, boys. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time you ever mentioned the word boys to her. You know, you're preparing and you're building. So that's me.
Definitely.
What you got for us? Who want to go first?
I'll go, man. Only thing that I got, this conversation just really made me think about talking to your kids, man, and having those conversations and making sure that they're ready for life, because ignoring it isn't going to cut it. I mean, they're not going to be ready. So Sophie had her going to middle school. We went through and did the open house at the middle school and walked through and everything. And she had been just giving me lip for the last 2 or 3 days. And like right after, like I just snapped at her and Haley called me out for it. And, you know, I had to go and they were like, you got to apologize. So, well, I'm not apologizing, because she'd been annoying the shit with me. So she deserved that snap. But let's go talk to her. So, you know, I pulled her back down. I gave her a hug and we talked about it. And I just told her, I was like, it's not what you've been saying. It's how you've been saying it. It's the tone. It's the delivery. We had a really good conversation about it, and I didn't think anything of it, but I was putting her down for bed that night, and she was just like, Dad, thank you for the conversation. I'll try to watch my tone and whatever later. And so have the conversation with the kids. Don't fuss at them and then just ignore it after. You got to go back. You got to have a conversation. You got to talk to them, and you got to make sure that they're right, so that they're healed, right? It's like we talked about, and they find peace. So you want your kids to have peace, man. Don't be like just having them scared to talk to you, scared to come around, that type of thing. So that's all I got, man.
Oh, wow. So last week I forgot to mention this. I don't know how it slipped my mind, but the Republican leader of the Senate announced that he will not seek I guess you can call it election as the leader of the party. He's going to hand the reins over to somebody else.
Didn't he just get in?
No, Mitch McConnell.
Oh, Mitch. Oh, okay. Mitch. All right.
I have routinely called him probably the most successful politician of my lifetime. He never lost an election. His main focus became Supreme Court justices, and he got many of them confirmed. He's the reason why we have a 6-3 conservative Supreme Court. So hate his politics, love his politics, wherever you fall, you cannot deny his effectiveness as a leader. And, I don't know if you want to say job well done or good riddance, whatever you want to say. He's handed the leadership over to someone else after November.
Do you forgive him?
Do I forgive him?
We were talking about just forgiveness, and so I just felt like
I have nothing to forgive the leader on. I love all 100 senators. I mentioned TikTok at the top of the show. Not TikTok itself, users on TikTok. I just want people to be aware. You should already know this, but just in case you don't, people on there have been stealing the photos of real doctors and I guess posting them as endorsing different types of supplements and vitamins and things like that. And please be careful what you put in your body and don't just take someone who's making pills in their office or bedroom as gospel on what it's supposed to do for your body. Please just be careful. Don't believe everything on, not just social media, just don't believe everything you see. And last but not least, man, speaking of pills, Viagra, I don't know if some of you guys know this, but Viagra has been linked to better brain functionality, and it has shown anywhere from 18 to 44% reduced risk of Alzheimer's in people that take it regularly. So the pill that initially was meant to combat heart disease and high blood pressure, and people started saying, hey, I'm getting these erections for hours at a time, it became our current pill.
Uh-huh. Erectile dysfunction pill.
Yes. It apparently helps the brain too. So, you know, keep that blue pill going into the 60s and 70s, man, because it's for your brain.
Yeah, man.
It's for your brain. Yeah, it's brain food.
I miss them blue pills, man.
Good for your head.
Missed them blue pills. My dad was living. He used to get them. My dad used to be like, you want some of these? Like, don't mind if I do.
TMI, sir. TMI.
Oh, hell TMI. Mercy.
I'm gonna go.
Wow.
That's I didn't all expect that. Didn't expect that to come from your conversation.
I did not. That's all I got, man. Damn.
All right. I'm gonna make mine quick. Today is March 8th, better known as International Women's Day. So happy, by the time this drops, it will be Monday. So happy belated International Women's Day. Just so you know, that just a little history. International Women's Day is celebrated on March 8th every year to mark and celebrate the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women and raise awareness about women's equality and celebrate gender parity. International Women's Day was first observed in 1911. March 8th? It began in New York City on March 8th, 1857, when female textile workers marched in protest of unfair working conditions and unequal rights for women. It was one of the first organized strikes by working women, during which they called for a shorter work day and decent wages. So just don't want to say anything, blindly and not have anything behind it. You know, congratulations. Happy International Women's Day. Keep moving your message. Keep moving whatever. We are allies. Doesn't mean we agree with everything you say, everything you do, but we're allies. So one of these days I'm going to talk about allies, and I have a whole question set around that. So with that being said, Three Brothers No Sense, your favorite barbershop style podcast, Six Rules of Podcast. Listen, like, share, subscribe, comment, and most importantly, listen again. Talk to you next week.